Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. The Friends of the Logan Library will be presenting a screening of the film Band Together, The Fight Against Censorship, along with a panel discussion. And today we're going to preview this event to talk about the ongoing debates in many communities about banning books. Here's a description of Band Together. The film pulls back the curtain on two of the most controversial issues in America today, book bans and curriculum censorship in public schools. Band Together follows three students and their adult allies as they fight to reinstate 97 books suddenly pulled from their school libraries. And as they evolve from local to national activists, meeting with best-selling banned authors, politicians, constitutional experts, and more, the film reveals the dark forces behind the accelerating wave of book bans in the United States. That film screening and panel discussion is this Saturday, April 19th, 2 to 4:30 p.m. in Logan Library Community Room B. And the event is free and open to the public. And today we bring in Frank Ashion from the Friends of the Logan Library. Frank, thanks for joining us.
You're very welcome, Tom. Happy to be here.
Good to have you. And then panel members, you'll be hearing from them on the event and today. Jadine Dennison. Jadine Dennison, thanks for joining us. Let's see, we have to unmute here. There you go.
To be here.
Good to have you. Good to have you. And Jay Black is with us. Thanks, Jay.
Good to be here.
Let's get some brief introductions. Frank Ashion, emeritus professor, I think, is it psychology, USU?
Emeritus at USU and emeritus at the University of Denver Graduate School of Social Work.
Yeah. Jadine Dennison, I understand, retired school teacher, at least a part of your bio?
I put 42 years in Cache County School District. 37 of them in libraries, started three libraries from scratch and taught library science at Utah State University for almost 30 years.
Yeah. So you have very direct experience with what we're going to talk about today. So thank you. Jay Black, emeritus professor, right? You were at USU Media Ethics, I think, and then you went to the South somewhere to teach.
Yes. I came back.
You came back. That's right. I think Alabama and Florida, and then you came back. So we're glad to have you back. So before we jump into this, the topic of banned books and curriculum censorship in public schools, Frank Ashion, I want to talk just very briefly about the role of community library. You obviously believe in the mission. You're with Friends of Logan Library. Just talk to me about why it's important to have a community library.
Well, the entire mission and focus of the Friends of the Logan Library is to support the activities of our Logan Library. I have been, ever since we moved to Utah and Cache Valley, we immediately looked for a library. We had young children on the way, and we needed to know where it was available. And for many years, we lived in Hiram, Utah, and there was no library at that time in the mid to late 70s. And the great event in our neighborhood was when the bookmobile would arrive. Mm-hmm. And children would, you know, filter out from homes and run to this wonderful facility that was provided for us. So the importance of that, I think any parent can testify to the value of libraries. In fact, if you sit outside the entrance to the Logan Library on a late afternoon or a Saturday morning, you see groups and groups and groups of families coming with their children, either to return fistfuls of books or to go in and obtain more. So we know that libraries are a resource for those who, for example, may not have access to the internet, may not have access to a personal computer where they can search for materials that way. And so the library is a wonderful opportunity for our community to make available to everyone, regardless of age and background and interests, a resource that can be used, paid through tax dollars, but a resource that can be used to provide those opportunities for everyone in our community. Mm.
I have very fond memories of the bookmobile out in Vernal, Uinta County. For example, and the library. very important, school yep. and the community library. Gideon Dennison, I guess similar question to you. I don't know what, were you in grade school or middle school, high school when you were at the library?
I did elementary most of my career and a few years at Mountain Crest High School. Mm-hmm. But I also want to say that we also, Logan Library and almost every library here in the Valley actually checks out Chromebooks and hot boxes for students and for patrons to have a computer at home at no cost.
Yeah. Yeah. Great, great services, right? Yeah. Yeah. Wonderful. I guess just one more thing, Frank, on this. I'm noticing a beautiful new library, a new building, right, for the Logan Library. And I'm noticing this not only Logan Library, but other libraries these days that I go into, that it seems to be fewer books and more event rooms. So, this is, I guess, maybe online, more people are reading online books, for example, ebooks. But libraries are not just books, right? Libraries are a community meeting place.
They are. And that's what we're hoping will happen with this event on Saturday. Not only will the screening of the documentary occur, but the panelists, I think, will provide unique perspectives on the whole issue that is the focus of the documentary. So, yes. And I think, one of the advantages of bringing on the new director of the Logan Library, Michael Sowers, is that his background is in technology. And so I think we can foresee great things for the Logan Library in terms of meeting the needs of people who like that paper and bound book in their hands, and those who are more comfortable clicking keys to access materials.
So let's get into this idea of banning books, censorship, right? I guess the library is versus a family that can purchase all the books is kind of a way to get in here. If you're a family that can afford to just buy all the books for your kids, and that's what you do, then it's kind of a moot point for you. You have total control, but that's not most families, right? Most families rely on a community library, a school library, and then that's where our individual families meet together as a public, and that's where a debate comes in, right?
I agree with that, Tom, and I think that I'm going to let Jadeen respond to this issue. I think we need to make a distinction with the banning of material from libraries, especially school libraries, and the procedures that libraries have in place to make certain that materials in the library are accessible to individuals of different ages with different kinds of protocols. So I think there's an important issue about, making certain that our children have access to material that is appropriate for them rather than just the banning of books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess, Jay, that's a good starting point, right? We could all agree that some material is not appropriate for one age, but it would be for another. So, yeah, talk about that.
Well, you have to understand every library should have selection policies and deselection policies. And that's been a problem across the United States. In fact, even the state of Utah, many of our school districts did not have selection policies approved by their school boards. And the state of Utah school board now has every district that is in place now. It took me from 1979 when I became a librarian till 2015 when I retired to get Cache County School District to put one in place in our policy manual. And I'm not sure why, but what that does, it allows us to have criteria for selection. Why do we buy what we buy? And in schools, the number one selection is you buy for curriculum. Mm-hmm. So you buy things that meet the curriculum first, and then you look at other things before you start buying, like community and who's in your community and what do your teachers need.
So did you have, over those years, did you have instances where a parent was uncomfortable with any of the books in the library?
I probably had about 25 censorship cases in my library.
Yeah.
And I had my community council or my PTA always approve my selection policy for the school that we had. And we followed protocol.
Yeah.
And what happens is you deflate the anger when you have that policy in place and a person comes in to question a book or to complain about a book. you hand them that and you thank them for giving you a reason to take another look at it, because we do make mistakes as librarians. You know, you may miss a couple of words in a book that some parents are going to complain about, but if you have a committee and a way of taking care of it, everybody comes out happy in the end, or hopefully they come out happy in the end. Some parents we know don't. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I had a lot of cases. The one at Mountain Crest was the movie Helter Skelter. And what we found out is the teacher did not show the rented version. We showed the one that we copied off legally that did not have anything inappropriate in it for our social studies or our psychology students to watch. And it was decided to keep that movie in the school.
So there was a, you fought to have a process. You got a process. What do you think of the process now that's mandated by law in Utah?
I have a few concerns because I still think it pulls books out in some school districts and some public libraries where the community is very different than others. We go from Salt Lake City to our rural areas, and the community is very different in those. But as a whole, I think it has really helped our parents, people that live in the state of Utah, realize how much we do care about making sure what we have is appropriate and the best of the best we can spend our money on. Mm-hmm. I think it's a real positive. I look at what's happened in Cache County School District. We've had three books questioned, and they followed policy, and it came out very, very well in the end.
Mm-hmm. Jay Black, I want to get your perspective here. I guess just anything in general, and then the idea of where does a concern move into censorship?
I guess my job here is more to stand back, as they say, the critic comes down from the hill after the battle and shoot the wounded. I have a broader perspective, I think. I'm looking and most concerned about First Amendment issues, values that the community and the schools and the children and the libraries are reflecting, why the dialogue is so often talking to instead of talking with, why the First Amendment is so important. So I don't know. I'll try to be of some help as we go along.
Yeah. Well, let me jump in immediately here then, Jay. There's a law professor in the film. These three students here, the stars of the film, you know, teenagers, high schoolers, they go and talk to this law professor. And he talks about the First Amendment. He said we should not assume that all these ideas are going to indoctrinate you, right? You should be exposed to many ideas. Mm-hmm. And I guess that is some parents' concern, right? That you're going to meet an idea, and their student is going to be attracted by that idea, and the parent doesn't want that.
I think when the First Amendment was written, and it was written at a time when, you know, public communication was pretty rowdy, politically fraught, and socially. I mean, the First Amendment worked well for, you know, the rich landholders, et cetera, et cetera. But the idea is that all of us should have First Amendment protection. And even the Supreme Court has argued that this, you know, freedom doesn't stop at the schoolhouse door. So what we're trying to do then is say, okay, so what does it mean in the schools? What does it mean in the public libraries? What does it mean in the community at large to have totally unfettered communication? What's wrong with absolute First Amendment? And I think the discussion already you've heard this morning, the discussion is, well, it's not for everybody. It's not at the same level for everybody. Different groups have different obligations to communicate with each other and the abilities to communicate with each other. So, the First Amendment, I guess I'm a militant moderate on that.
Jay, is there, and I'll get the other perspective on this as well, first on with Jay. Part of this is, that you talk about age appropriateness, right?
Yeah.
But some parents are saying whatever it is not appropriate for any kid. Not for my kid, but not for your kid either, right?
That's of some concern. That's a real concern when you are making sweeping observations and statements and policies and rules to apply to everybody and not just, you know, to your own immediate community or even your own family. So, you know, these discussions need to continue, and they won't be effective unless they open-minded discussions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tom, I was,
go ahead.
I was doing a bit of research in preparation for viewing the documentary myself. And I was kind of interested in knowing, you know, what books are being banned? What is the nature of these books? And I remember, in early high school that we were required to read The Catcher in the Rye, the famous J.D. Salinger novel. And that book has been banned in a number of communities. One of the authors who is on the banned book list in Utah is Margaret Atwood. And the book that is banned is one of her more recent dystopian novels, part of a trilogy. But I also learned that The Handmaid's Tale is banned in a number of communities. And one of the telling elements in that story of The Handmaid's Tale is that in Gilead, this very strict Orthodox religious community, women are not permitted to read and they're not permitted to write. And the punishment for engaging in either of those activities on the first offense is to have their hand removed. So I think that, you know, when we look at a story like that, I think it prompts us to talk about the values, as Jay was describing. What are the values being presented to us in a dystopian novel like that? And how do we feel about those values? And at what ages do we think our children should be introduced to concepts like that?
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of Margaret Atwood, I think Oryx and Crake is banned in Utah, and at least in part for descriptions of sexual acts, I think.
Yes, I believe so. I think it's the depiction of fanatical religion, as well as sexual acts, as well as assaults on women and their rights.
Yeah. So, Gideon Dennison, I don't know if you've, you know, encountered this in your career, but for example, in a book like Oryx and Crake, some descriptions would be, as I was talking about with Jay, offensive to some parents and some families. And I guess where it comes in is those families wanting to impose that on other families. But the parents who want this banned altogether would say that that some of these descriptions and are not appropriate for any child.
I think it comes back to parents and students. It's educating our students. If there's something in a book that bothers you, close the book and don't finish it. Talk to your parents about what you're reading. I think that's one of the problems we have in this nation is our parents don't know what our kids are reading. And I'll just give you an example. I had a patron mother who read Sybil. It's an older book, but her son wanted to read it so bad. He was a third grader, very smart, very bright. And I said to his mother, "You really think he's mature enough to read Sybil?" And she said, "Well, yes, I read it." And I said, "Which version did you read?" And she said, "Oh my gosh, I read the Reader's Digest version. Is it different?" And I said to her, "I'm going to go home and get my copy of Sybil, and I'm going to let you read it, and you make the decision what's right for your son, not me." She took the book, came back the next day and went, "I had no idea there were different copies of different stories for different people." And it's like when the Hunger Games came out, I was very against elementary, middle school reading that book because of the content in the book and the ideas in the book. Not that I didn't think some of my students out at Mountain Crest and Mendon could handle it. I just didn't think they were old enough to read it yet.
Mm-hmm. By the way, the boy that wanted to read Sybil, which version did the mother give him?
She never let him read it.
She did not let him read it.
No,
okay.
She decided it was not it was not a book for a third grader at that point.
Okay. Yeah, third grader, yeah, that'd be a little young. Maybe if he was in high school, right? Yeah.
Well, and I think it goes down as we need to educate parents. That's their choice, not ours. That parents have a right to tell their kids what they can and can't read. And I don't know where the idea came from, because I've never had that you have to open a book and finish it. That it's okay to put a book down, that if there's something in that book, and you talk to children. I had a little girl out at Mountainside. Every time she found a swear word, she'd bring it in and show me, and she'd circle it with a pencil, and it took me 2 years to get her to quit doing that. We finally put sticky notes in it and said, it's okay to tell me they're in there, but let's take a look at why they're in there. Do they develop character? Is there a reason they're there? And if you don't want to read that word, then don't read it. Put it down. You don't have to read those words.
And I think, Tom, too, when we're talking about the issue of banning books and censorship and what's age appropriate, I think that there are ramifications of the dialogue that's going on about these issues that I think will eventually bleed into, and I think have already started to bleed into, not just public schools, elementary schools, high schools, but academic institutions for adults. And I think two cases in point that are in the news right now are the requirements that the current administration has attempted to impose on Harvard University. And the resistance, because of concerns about academic freedom, that those requirements raise. And I think the second example is the removal of over 300 books. I looked at 19 pages of book listings that have been removed from the United States Naval Academy. And we're not talking about, you know, fourth graders. We're talking about future officers in our very distinguished military. And so what that kind of activity says about the way we treat ideas and the exchange of ideas, I think is part of what's concerning.
Mm-hmm. Jay Black, I want to get your perspective on this. I want to frame it this way. There's a one of the three girls and the young woman in the film, the heroines here. She describes herself as queer, and I think it's her in a debate about what particular book that some parents objected to because it had LGBTQ themes. She or someone else in the film says, "Let's not take away each other's stories." Right. And that is, if you get into censorship, again, that's part of what the First Amendment is there to do. Right. Let's include everybody's story.
And that should be fundamental in education. I think all three of the panelists recognize that my wife ought to be on this panel. She was an award winning kindergarten teacher, and she just handed me a list of leading questions to use with literature and a statement on the incredible importance of just having literature, what it does to develop empathy, what it does to have people, young children, recognize there are other opportunities, there are other lifestyles, there are other issues than what they have been exposed to, including what they've been exposed to on their social media, which is another question I suspect we're going to get into.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. How do you move from like one stage of moral development to another if you're not exposed to ideas that are outside of the stage that you're in a rut in already? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember Frank talking about social psychology and moral development decades ago. observing that at the lowest stages of moral development, we have very little empathy. We have very little sense of other. It's mostly about ourselves and being rewarded or being punished. As we advance, we move into sensitivity about others. We move into an ethics of caring for or caring about entire civilizations. Anyway, I'll get off that soapbox.
Yeah. No, that's great. That's great. We're overdue for a break. Let's take a break, a brief break, and then we'll come back much more in this discussion. We're talking with panelists who are going to, you'll be able to hear a fuller discussion along with a film screening. The film is Band Together, The Fight Against Censorship. So the film will be screened and they'll have the panel discussion on Saturday. This Saturday, 2 to 4:30 p.m. in the Logan Library Community Room B. That event is free and open to the public. We're previewing that with a couple of the panelists, Jay Black and Gideon Dennison. We're talking with Frank Ashion from Friends of the Logan Library. We'll have more in this discussion following this. Thanks for listening to Access U Time. Tom Williams. There's an event coming up. We're inviting you to be a part of it. The Friends of Logan Library will be presenting a screening of the film Band Together, The Fight Against Censorship. There'll be a panel discussion following, and that film screening panel discussion is this Saturday, 2 to 4:30 p.m. in the Logan Library Community Room B. The event is free and open to the public. We're talking with Frank Ashion with the Friends of the Logan Library and panel members J.D. and Dennison and Jay Black. Very interesting discussion, fuller discussion on Saturday, of course. I was interested in one book that's being banned in some areas. It's called 19 Minutes, and it's talked about in the film. It's a description. I guess the plot has to do with a school shooting, and some parents object to this because they feel like this is going to plant ideas in kids' heads and maybe lead to school violence. I want to throw this to J.D. and Dennison first. Did you over your career did you have any of this kind of objection to any books? It's interesting. There's another book in the film that talks about drug abuse, and again, some parents were objecting to this will put ideas in my kid's head.
I think we had Helter Skelter, we had Go Ask Alice. There are a lot of books about drugs. If the book is well written, for my opinion, I think it discourages kids from trying that. You're always going to have those students that want to be in the limelight. But I think books do the opposite if they're well written, because I think it gives them both sides. There is a book called Izzy Wizzy. It's about a girl who goes with a boy and is in an accident, loses her leg because he's drunk. And it's a powerful book. It's old, but it is a powerful book of why the pressure of being with a high school senior football player and what ended up happening. There are so many girls that come away with that book knowing that they should make better choices. And I could give you hundreds of books that teach kids the right way to do things or the way they should think about doing things. I think that's why literature is so important. And I think Leslie is right, Jay's wife, in the fact that it gives us empathy on everything out there. It gives us knowledge that we can't get sometimes.
Go ahead, Jadine. Go ahead.
I just remember when we went to the moon, there was all the controversy. Did we really go? Well, how can you deny that when you have the facts out there and you could go in and research the facts? How many of us will go? Not many of us in today's society, but the experience of being there is right there for us. And we see that through video, through reading about it. What an experience. I had a student that said to me one day, he said, Mrs. D, I want to just give you a hug as I leave. He was graduating from Mountainside. He said, you didn't teach me how to read, but you certainly taught me why to read. Mm-hmm. Amen. And he said, that is more important than the skill of reading.
Yeah, that is beautiful, isn't it? Jay, you know, you're talking about your wife and kindergarten, and we were talking before about that reading is what and inhabiting these other worlds and other people's lives is what creates empathy, helps to create empathy, and I guess that starts as soon as you start reading.
And it should start even before you start reading, because if parents don't read to their children, children are less likely to have the enthusiasm to read for themselves. Looking at our own children and looking at experiences that my wife has shared over the years, I just think it's incredibly important that kids, that in every classroom there's free time for reading, and that the parents are encouraged to spend time with their children and reading. Get them off. I'm worried about social media, Tom, and I think that reading a book is such a different psychological experience than going on Twitter or, you know, FaceTime, for all sorts of reasons. And empathy is one of them. See other worlds, see other opportunities. What's it like to live in poverty, or what's it like to live in violence? What's it like to live in food insecurity? These are ideas that can be introduced gently at the appropriate level, but then to the point where you get like these high school students in South Carolina, such a high level of empathy. They not only cared about issues, they cared for, and that is, you know, a peak experience that it's unusual for a high school kid to have that level of maturity. And you can bet it's because of a lot of reading. I wouldn't know for sure, but people I've encountered who don't read don't seem to see beyond the end of their nose about the needs and passions and experiences of others.
I wanted to comment on your observation that some parents are concerned that if a child reads a book, they will immediately try to emulate what has been depicted in the book. And it made me think back again to one of the profound experiences I had reading. And I was a late reader. I resisted reading for the longest time, even though books were all over our home. But in high school, The Lord of the Flies by William Golding was required reading. And, you know, this story of young British kids who their plane has crashed during a war and they're by themselves on an island, and a depiction of what evolves in terms of the kind of social structure among these young boys emerges, only to end with a military person saving them who is also in the midst of a war with his peers. It just had made such a profound impact on me, because I could empathize with the kids who were bullied on that island. I could empathize and see the faces of some bullies I knew. And, you know, it didn't make me want to go out and create a group that would do the same things that those young boys did on that island. It just made me realize how things can devolve very rapidly if we don't care for one another, as Jay said, that the importance of empathy and the importance of cases where empathy is lacking. So that was just another example that flooded into my mind as we were talking.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. Yeah, I'm remembering some of my earliest books as well. It had a huge impact on me, right? So Gideon Dennison, I want to get this. So Jay mentioned there's a big difference between, you know, experiencing social media and experiencing reading, right? I want to get your perspective on a recent Utah law which bans phones in schools. What do you think about that?
You're going to get into. I am really big into media literacy, and it is part of the library core for certified librarians to teach. I think social media has a place, but I also think it can be very negative. I think it really changes our children's thinking process because there's so much out there that's not accurate, and we're not teaching them to go through and access and understand and apply the information they're learning on social media. So telling kids that phones should not be used in school, I think, is a wonderful idea. It doesn't mean you don't have one where kids can get to parents if they need to. You know, I'm almost 76, and I lived without phones for a long time. And yet, you know, what is sitting right here so that if I need to answer it, I can. I mean, I use my phone all the time. I think it has its place. Having two grandchildren that would rather be on their phones. And these girls were read to in womb. I used to call them and read to them before they were born. My girls were bombarded with books, and they are both very, very avid readers. I don't care some of the things they read, but that's okay. I think there has to be a balance. I think we need to teach kids the good part of the web and the bad part of the web. And I don't think we're doing that justice in our schools. I really don't.
I'd love to get Frank and Jay's reaction to this. Frank, what do you think about this? I don't know if you retired before all the kids in your classes were had their heads bowed and on their phones.
Well,
or
actually,
not,
thankfully, I did, Tom. I did retire before that happened. However, you know, I would imagine that there probably were some cases where, you know, I was teaching something about developmental psychology or about child abuse or animal abuse, and young people in my class might be fact checking me and challenge me on something. That's perfect. That's what this is all about. You know, if I made a statement that could not be backed up by empirical data, come on, tell me about it. You're going to help educate me, and I'm going to change my lecture for the next time. So I think there can be value in that. But unfortunately, I suspect that many of the open laptops in my classes were not fact checking me, but rather setting up their next date or a social event. So, yeah, I'm glad that I disappeared from education before the ubiquitous use of mobile devices entered our classrooms. And I just don't know. I also want to comment about that young person or the parent who was concerned that the book 19 Hours would give children ideas about becoming school shooters. They don't need to read a book about that, because from kindergarten, they've been practicing what to do if there's an active shooter in your classroom.
Yeah.
So that's already happening. And the book, in my estimation, is not going to be an impetus to that. That's too much of a complex question and a complex issue to simply blame it on the voice of one author.
Jay Black, I want to get your perspective on the same thing. I'll frame it this way. And this relates to this discussion on book banning. A lot of the people in the film are talking about, you know, read the whole book. Don't just take something out of context. And Judy and Dennis was talking about with social media and online things. Let's teach media literacy, I guess. Let's teach kids how to use this stuff and not just have your brain turn to mush.
Exactly. And I think, again, it starts with parents. I remember, I remember during COVID, Leslie and I read to the grandchildren in Pennsylvania, and, you know, every night. I think if parents, they have such a key role. If parents would read to their children and then talk with them about the issues in the books and ask provocative questions and make sure that, you know, make sure the children are really engaged and not just speed reading or meeting an assignment or something like that. Make it an experience that can become a lifelong experience and enjoyment of reading. I'm catching Frank's coughing here. I'm sorry. It's too early in the morning for talking. But let's look for ways to make community. And Tom, I don't think you can blame a book for creating violence any more than you can credit a particular book for creating goodness and love and, you know, world peace. It's not that simple.
We just have about 5 minutes left in the discussion. It's gone by fast. Good discussion. I want to make sure I get this in. I'm going to direct this to you, Jay, first. The film, and again, it's the film is Band Together, The Fight Against Censorship, and Friends of Logan Library presenting a screening of that film, followed by a panel discussion. And that is this Saturday, 2 to 4:30 p.m. in the Logan Library Community Room B. The event is free and open to the public. Hope you come if you can. So in the film, they talk not only about banning books, but curriculum changes. And this is centered on Florida, and I think we've all heard about this. In Florida, they've made changes to the curriculum. And from the opponent's point of view to these changes, they're sanitizing slavery, right? This is kind of a anti-critical race theory, is the proponents of this are saying. For example, one person in the film says, proponents of this curriculum changes, we don't want white kids to feel guilty about slavery, for example. Another passage is you're supposed to teach that slaves learned skills that they can then use for, you know. So in other words, kind of sanitizing slavery a little bit. I'll throw this to you, Jay, first of all. This is, in some people's minds, censorship. This is changing history in a very inappropriate way.
Yeah. And all you have to do is look at, in the last few weeks, the changing of the description of the Underground Railroad. I don't know if you've seen that, but it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't even think they're using the word enslaved anymore when they talk about the Underground Railroad. And as Frank has said, even the Naval Academy, there's a trend that we need to be alerted to. And I would hope that this movie and discussion is of some value to people who might not have thought deeply about it. I don't think it's just a liberal conservative issue. I think it's a question of open and closed mindedness at all levels. And, you know, some of the arguments against Harvard are that it was too open minded in one direction to what's open minded, that their brains have fallen out. Is that the idea of about being too open minded? Some kind of a balance and conversation is needed.
Mm-hmm. Well, we just reached very near the end. So, J.D. and Dennison, just 30 seconds. Anything you'd like to say here at the end? Thought you haven't expressed yet?
I just hope parents will be informed of how important it is that you know what your children are reading and that you provide them with as much access to information that we can. I truly believe there's a book for every child and a child for every book. And I think the more we can get into our children and understand the importance and the fun of reading, it will change a lot of the censorship that we have in this nation. Mm. I want kids to be informed. I want them to think. I don't want to take that away from our schools.
Very good. Frank Ashion, we'll give you the last word, about 30 seconds.
Yes, in preparation for this event on Saturday, I've been rereading Ray Bradbury's classic Fahrenheit 451, and another dystopian novel of what happens when a society no longer permits books to be held by its people. And I just hope that some of these dystopian views don't begin to get more traction than they already have. And so I'm hoping that we'll be able to talk about this Saturday and have a wonderful dialogue about the value of books in human society.
We'll reach the end of our time. Much more to say, and you have opportunity to go and hear from these panelists and to view this film. So there's a screening of the film Band Together, The Fight Against Censorship, that's presented by the Friends of the Logan Library. and followed by a panel discussion. That is this Saturday, 2 to 4:30 p.m. in Logan Library Community Room B. The event is free and open to the public. We've been talking with panel members, Jadine Dennison and Jay Black and Frank Ascione from the Friends of the Logan Library. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you. And thanks, everybody, for listening to Access Utah.
It's One Sky, Many Cultures, Skywatcher Leo T here, as we turn through another day and night in the timeless patterns of the universe. In the daytime sky, our own personal star, or the sun, is having a party of flares and solar events like coronal mass ejections. Dan Cooper, a scientifically trained engineer and a friend, a longtime amateur astronomer. I like to think of him as our Wyoming Skywatcher correspondent. He lives on the flank of pine-covered Casper Mountain with a great view. And he's been studying this sun lately with his Hydrogen Alpha Sunscope and has been keeping me updated this week on our life-giving stars' activities. 3 days ago, Dan sent me some exciting news, he said. The sun is really something. A moderate flare has lasted all afternoon. There are also two smaller flares widely separated. The flare is in the same place as the one yesterday and one the day before. Never saw anything like it. Until now, I had not seen a flare last much more than a half hour. Science cannot explain much at all about this yet. The only reason it doesn't scare me is that the sun has gone 4.5 billion years already without destroying the Earth. And as I checked in with him yesterday...
Well, what's happening right now, I got an alert on my phone that there was a solar flare. These alerts are triggered by X-ray flux from the sun. So I quick put the telescope outside and had a look. And instead of seeing a flare on the surface of the sun, I saw a bright, tight ball of a prominence on the edge. So the flare is actually coming from a sunspot that's a little bit around the edge on the other side of the sun. And I've been watching it for a couple hours now, and it changes. It changes shape, but it's still there.
That is so amazing that it's on the other side of the sun, but you can see the results of it.
Yeah, it's just a little bit around the other side. And it's on the side that's rotating towards us, so tomorrow we'll get a chance to see the sunspot that triggered it. As an amateur astronomer, I'm just finding the sun is the most interesting target because it changes all the time, and also because as I get old, I don't really like staying up late or getting up way before dawn. And the sun's always there when you got a clear day.
Great talking to you, Dan. Well, thank you for your correspondence. Also, this just in from CNN Science and a tip from Skywatcher Laura Jones. Going along with what Dan Cooper has been observing in Wyoming, multiple mass coronal ejections released from the sun on Sunday are arriving at Earth earlier than expected. These are large clouds of ionized gas called plasma and magnetic fields that erupt from the sun's outer atmosphere, and they're aimed at the Earth this time. So look for the colorful auroras in the U.S. due to the solar storms that are predicted to hit as I write this episode on Wednesday night the 16th, but many times the activity lasts longer than one night. It's hard to predict. But according to the National Weather Service's Space Weather Prediction Center, who does a great job, the aurora may be visible over many of the northern states and some of the lower Midwest to Oregon, so keep an eye out for auroras dancing with shooting stars this week. And joining in the celestial shenanigans is the Lyrid meteor shower. While looking for auroras, stay up late this week and you can spot these streakers. Look after midnight toward the east, after midnight toward dawn from a dark spot. The closer to dawn, the better. Firing off fastballs, bright meteors, and occasional fireballs, the Lyrids are a fun sight for stargazers. Active between April 16th and the 25th, the Lyrids can be seen streaking across the night sky, building toward their peak in the early hours of April 22nd, when the shower could produce around 10 to 20 meteors per hour under dark skies. The best time to see our meteors is before dawn, when the radiant is the highest in the sky. Look east and above toward rising Vega and Lyra, which is what the Lyrids are named after because it's from a meteor, or rather a comet, that came out of the area of Lyra. That'll be in the east. Also in space exploration history, on April 16th, 1972, Apollo 16 launched to the moon. Apollo 16 was NASA's fifth lunar landing and the next to the last mission of the Apollo moon landing program. The NASA astronauts were on board: John Young, the commander, Ken Mattingly, the command module pilot, and Charlie Duke, the lunar module pilot. They lifted off from Kennedy Space Center on a Saturn V rocket and spent 3 days cruising to the moon. They landed in the lunar highlands to look for volcanic rocks. They didn't find any, but they collected plenty of other moon rocks, though, and they brought more than 200 pounds back to the Earth. Also, Deke Slayton and Apollo crew did go into orbit after this to dock with a Soviet spaceship in what is called Glasnost, or Peace. So keep looking up, look around, get a little bit lost in space. Skywatcher Leo T.